We're holding on Ein Zayin Amud Aleph at the top. We learned yesterday about a machlokas of Rebbe and the Chachamim about when you're selling somebody a shtar, what is needed for him to be kohen. Is it enough that he does? Is it enough that we do mesira, that we just hand over the shtar from hand to hand? We talked about yesterday. Would that be is Mesira a stronger kinyan or a weaker kinyan than Mashiach? And is it possible that maybe the Gemara was referring to, for example, when there's a whole bag of shtaros where you wouldn't do hagbah with it and instead you do Mesira? In any case, so is that enough for
What is the Das, Alexander?
Ein Zayin? Ein Zayin.
Ein Sein. Thanks.
So we said, is it enough to just do that, to do Masira, that you're handing over the shtaris from hand to hand, and that would be enough that now the other person is koina, not just the physical medium that the shtar is written on, a piece of paper that he can use to wrap around a bottle, but with that, he's also koina what the shtar represents, the osius in it, as we called it yesterday. So is it enough to do Masira? According to Rebbe, it is. Or we said, according to the Chachamim, which we learned yesterday, really represents Reb Nosson, would be that it's not enough. You have to also, it's not enough to do Mesira. You also have to write a shtar that says that you're selling the first shtar to the other person. So the Gemara says, Omer HaMemer, Hilchasa Osius Niknis V'Mesira K'Rebbe, the halacha is, like Rebbe, that Osius are acquired by Mesira, that all you need to do is hand them over. And you don't need to write out a shtar for that. Now that's according to so Omalet of so wait Omalet of Ashi la Meima Gemara is Svara. So Rav Ashi asks Amema, you're telling me that the halacha follows Rebbe in this. Is this Gemara that you learned this way from your Rebbeim, or is it Svara, or is it just a Svara of your own? Now, after all, usually we have the rule that the halacha, as we talked about yesterday, the halacha is like Rebbe only when it's against one individual Tana, not when it's against the Chachamim. Here, where the Braisa that discussed this point had presented as Rebbe versus the Chachamim, you would expect that the halacha should be like the Chachamim, and therefore you should require a shtar to be written for it. So Rav Ashi asks, this that you're saying, though, that the halacha in this case is like Rebbe, is that Gemara, you learned that way from your Rebbeim, or Svara, or is it a Svara of your own that you found Rebbe's opinion more compelling? Omale, so Rav Meimar answers him, Gemara, I learned it from my Rebbeim this way. Whatever Svara we can find, fine and good, but mainly it's but mainly it's that the Gemara, the way I learned from my Rebbeim, is that the halacha is like Rebbe. Now that's according to the Rashbam. Tosfos and many other Rishonim bring a girsa that say that Amemar says ain osius nichnas v'mesira. That on the contrary, so the Rashbam says that listen, you find in many places in Shas this concept osius nichnas v'mesira, that it's enough as far as osius to just give over the shtar and say, I'm selling you the shtar and you don't need anything further. So therefore, Amemar must be saying the same thing over here, since that's the conclusion of the Gemara. On the other hand, Tosfos says those various other Gemaras are not a proof for that, because those are talking about other circumstances over there. And so Tosfos says, no, the correct girsa would be Ein Osius Niknis V'Mesira, meaning that Amemar is saying the halacha is like the Chachamim. Tosfos also brings from Rabbi Yehudoi Goin from the Halachos Gedolos that osius, that a shtar can't be acquired with chalifin either. Meaning, in other words, there's a whole discussion about that. Rabbeinu Yonah on this Gemara discusses over here. Would that mean that? So is or is Rabbi Yehudoi Goin saying that it doesn't work to do Mesira even when you're combining it together with a Kinyan Sudr or something like that? And the only valid way to do it is to write a Shtar Mechira. So that would be what he's saying. So Tosfos is saying two things. Number one, Amema is saying over here in the Gemara that Osius are not Niknas v'Mesira. It's not enough to just hand them over. And number two, based on what Rabbi Yehuda Goyen is saying, no other method of Kinyan will work at, other than writing out a shtar for it. And again, Tosfos discusses at some length, and therefore, so according to that, then when Rav Ashi says to Amemar, are you going according to Gemara or Svara? So the question would be, the Rashba explains, we know the general rule is that the halacha is like Rebbe only when it's against one other Tana, Mechavei Roy, against one individual Chaver, but not Mechavei Rav. So are you saying now, when you say the halacha is like the Chachamim, are you basing it just on that Gemara, on that known, on that known rule? Or is it that there's a svara that you actually found a compelling reason to hold like the Chachamim? And so he's answering him, according to that, he's answering him, Gemara, I'm going strictly based on the fact that the halacha is like Rebbe, is not like Rebbe when he's arguing against the Chachamim. So the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Ashi svara namli. So Rav Ashi says, in fact, it is a svara as well. According to the Rashbam, the girsa is that Amema had said the halacha is like Rebbe, and he had said, I just learned that way from my Rebbeim, and now Rav Ashi is going to back that up with a svara and show what the logic is to say that a shtar can be acquired with Mesira alone. According to Tosfos and many of the other Rishonim, rather, we said that Amema had said, you can't acquire it with Mesira, you also need to write out a shtar, and he had said, that's Gemara, that's just based on the fact that the halacha is not like Rebbe against the Chachamim. And then Rav Ashi is going to come to say, actually, you can find a logical svara behind that as well. Namely, Rav Ashi says, de osius mili ninu. After all, the whole concept of osius, the whole concept that you're giving over the shtar to somebody else, and he's going to be able to collect the debt, is mili, is words, or mili b'mili v'miknin. It's not logical that you should be able to acquire words with words. So therefore, so it's true. So according to the Rashbam, Rav Ashi's argument is as follows: the main thing must be the Mesira. Why would it help to write another shtar? All you're doing is then you're saying a second shtar, which has mili in it, which means word, which has words in it, is going to be used to acquire the first shtar, which also has words in it. What would be the point? The point must be, therefore, that Mesira alone would be enough. That's according to the Rashbam. According to Tosfos and the other Rishonim, what Rav Ashi is saying is the other way around. Given that the shtar, the original shtar, is only mili, and you're doing Mesira, and you're saying him, you be koina that shtar, that would be mili alone. Once you add in that you're writing another shtar, then you have more than just mili, then you have something significant, and then therefore that's reason that the that will be a maisa. Tosfos uses the expression, there's no greater maisa than that.
Are we saying here that a shtar is not assignable, basically?
So what we're saying is a shtar is assignable. You can, if I have a shtar that Pliny owes me money, I can sell or gift that shtar to you. What we're discussing is what's the mechanism to make that happen, such that you won't just own the physical medium that the shtar is written on, the piece of paper, but that you'll actually own the debt. And now when Pliny comes and pays, then he's going to have to pay you. That's been the whole discussion over here in the sugya. The different possibilities. Is Mesira enough, or is a shtar also required? So now we're saying, in the end, Amemar is saying the halacha is one way according to that. But which way he's saying that, you have the machlokas between the Rashbam and Tosfos about the correct girsa. According to the Rashbam, we're saying it's enough to do, that Amemar is concluding, like Rebbe, it's enough to just do Mesira. It's enough that I give you the shtar and say, here, now the shtar is yours to go ahead and collect that debt. According to Tosfos, the other way around, Amemar is saying that no, just doing that is not enough. I'm also going to need to write out a shtar that says that I'm reassigning the debt in this shtar to you.
One second, there's two things here. There's the physical shtar, and
the physical
shtar,
you can be machna like anything else. The physical shtar, all you need is meshicha or hagbar or any of the other forms of kinyan. Here we're talking about the osius in the shtar, meaning the fact that that shtar represents X amount of money.
The title to the shtar.
What?
The title.
Yeah.
The title. So you're saying that a title is not transferable,
No, on the
not
contrary, we're saying it
assignable?
is. Where are you getting the where are you hearing over here that we're saying it's not transferable? We're saying it is transferable, but we have to find what is the mechanism to do so. Is it enough to just give it over to just give over the shtar and say you're being koine the shtar, and like Rav Papa had said in the Gemara yesterday that you're being koine the shtar and any shibud in it, or are we saying that in addition I would have to write out a shtar that says that I'm transferring the title on the first shtar to you? That is exactly what we've been discussing over here. That's Rebbe versus the Chachamim, and now you have a machlokas, Rashbam and Tosfos. What is a Maamar saying in that regard? What do you need in order to accomplish that?
What if we include in the first shtar a provision saying that it's just assignable the way it is? Why do we have to write a second shtar?
Because the fact is, what you have in the first shtar is mute, is woo. So therefore, so you need so according to the Rashbam, the vote is because all you're selling is words, and yes, that even if you wrote in a clause there that says that the shtar is transferable, it's still only mammon. So therefore, the main thing you need is a maaseh in order to accomplish that. And the Rashbam learns just writing another shtar would not be considered a maaseh; it would be considered just more words. So therefore, you need a maaseh, namely mesira. According to Tosfos, it's exactly the other way around. Just doing Masira would be a weaker form of Kenyan. You, in order to make it a strong Kenyan, that it'll actually transfer the title to what's owed in the shtar, for that you're going to, I was saying, you're going to need to write a second shtar, and that would be a Maisa, Godo Mizeh. There's no greater Maisa than that. One way or the other, everybody agrees that you can transfer the mili that's in the shtar. The Maholik, this is just what do you need to do exactly in order to do that? So the Gemara asks, so mili b'mili l'miknion. So you're telling me, actually, that was part of the answer. Osius mili, you know, or mili b'miknion, or mili b'mili l'miknion. You can't acquire mili words with mili with words. So according to the Rashbam, that means, in other words, it's not just writing out a second shtar is not going to help. You need to do actual mesira, and that all by itself is good. According to Tosfos, exactly the other way around. Just to do Masira and say you'll be koina the shtar would not be enough, and we need to write out a second shtar to state to, and we need to write out a second shtar, and therefore then we have a Maisa Godel, which now helps to transfer the title to the shtar. So the Gemara asks the loy. So you're telling me not you're telling me that mili, that words can't be acquired just with other mili, with other words. We find Rabbi Bar Yitzchok says, in the name of Rab, there's two cases involving shtaris when it comes to selling a field. You have like this. Suppose that a person says, the seller of the field says, I want you, Adim, to acquire this field on behalf of Pliny. So he's giving them, they're doing a Kenyan Seder, and he's saying this, the effect of this Kenyan Seder is going to be that you're going to acquire this field from me on behalf of Pliny. And they go and do the Kenyan Seder, and then he continues, V'kisvulois hashtar, and then he continues, write for him a shtar that I've sold him the field. So later on, later on, even after he gave them instructions to write the shtar, until the shtar actually reaches the recipient, he could change his mind and tell them, I don't want you to write the shtar after all. Because now, why would he want to do that? The Rashbam points out that he's giving the field to Pliny. So he doesn't. It has. We're talking about over here. He's giving the field because otherwise they wouldn't have needed a Kenyan Seder in the first place. Otherwise, Pliny is paying him money and he acquires the field. Fields can be acquired with kesef. So we're talking about that he's giving the field. Now he may decide that, you know what, I don't want to have a shtar on that. I don't want to have a shtar on that matana. Now, usually, the Rashbam points out, Udi and the Masechta, the Gemara had said that usually when you do a Kinyan in front of two Edim, you don't even have to tell them to write it, because usually once a Kinyan is made, it's assumed that we want to write a Shtar for it. but here where he specifically, so therefore, so by default, so even in other words, if he hadn't told them write the shtar and they went then and they went and wrote it on their own, it would have been fine. But now when he's when he told them to begin with write a shtar and then he's rescinding those instructions, then I mean we can't write a shtar, we can't write a shtar bal kochoi. So that would be case number one, where you have a shtar is supposed to be involved, but then he tells them not to write, then he tells them not to write shtar. So that's the Rashbam. Tosfos continues to discuss the question. Why? I mean, the Rashbam is saying he may not want to have matana shtar, but why not? What is he losing out from it? So Tosfos points out that a practical matter is that, let's say we are talking about, Tosfos seems to assume that we are talking about, well, the din we mentioned in the Gemara is about a gift, but Tosfos says it could refer to a sale as well. Now, if he's selling his land, he may not want that there should be a shtar on it because then people are going to know that he's selling his lands and therefore it's going to downgrade his credit rating. People are going to, People are going to think that they're going to even if it was a matana, people are going to think he now has less assets, he now has fewer assets, and therefore they're going to be less willing in the future to lend him money because after all, you lend somebody money, you want to be able to have a shibud on his land, and now that he has less land, then they're going to be less willing to. That's one explanation in Tosfos, and then another point Tosfos makes brings from Rabbeinu Tam that. He doesn't want that there should be a lot of outstanding shtaris against him. People are not going to know that this is a shtar matana. Fine, if they knew it was a shtar matana, then Rabbeinu Tam says it wouldn't downgrade his credit rating. Fine, he wants to give a present to Zunta Hay. But people are going to know that there's a shtar. They're not going to know what that shtar was. They're going to think it might be that he owes somebody money or that he sold somebody, that he sold somebody land and made a shibud on his karka. And therefore, he may not want, again, at that point, that public perception of what kind of shtar it is, then that might downgrade his credit rating. So those are two answers in Tosfos. Then there are a number of other answers among Rishonim. There's Rabbeinu Yonah says, Rabbeinu Yohonasan rather says that. What we mean is when he said as far as changing his mind, Rabbeinu Yohonasan says we don't mean as far as writing the actual shtar like Rashbam and Tosfos have said so far. It means normally when you're giving a gift, who's gonna at the end of the Masechta and the last Perek we're gonna talk about various cases where shtaris are going to be written. Who pays the soker for it? So you could have a case over here where he's giving a gift of a field to Pliny and telling two Edim to do a kinyan on it, and he's also offering to pay for writing the shtar. Now what we're saying is, chozer b'shtar doesn't mean to change his mind and say, don't write the shtar after all, just means, Rabbeinu Yohonasan says, that it means he can say, I don't want to pay for the writing of the shtar. If there's going to be a shtar written, let the recipient of the matona or the buyer of the field, let him pay for the shtar. So according to that, then a shtar is always going to be written because, yeah, he doesn't lose anything by it. Rabbeinu Yohonasan doesn't hold of the various svaris we said so far. Why not? But he says that he could rescind the permission that he's going to pay for it. And then there are various other explanations. The Shita Mekubetzes brings a number of different explanations. Brings from the Raivad and then Piskei Rid that also it's only an issue when the shtar contains achrayus nechosim and normally of course a shtar of a sale or a field is going to include achrayus nechosim. So that would be another case where he has the option to say I don't want the shtar written out after all.
Question.
Yeah.
Regarding the whether words can acquire words, the Torah was given during Aseret Hadibros, and okay. The Jewish people.
It was also written. So.
Well, one second. It was written, but the acquisition of the Torah was during Aseret Hadibros. So who says that words cannot be acquired with words?
Okay, what we're asking over here in the Gemara is that on the face of it, that's what we're asking. We're going to try to show that words can be acquired with words. But in any case, no, obviously a person can take on himself whatever obligation he wants. What we're talking about over here is we have a shtar that Reuven owes Shimon money, and now Shimon wants to sell that shtar to Levi, and now Levi will be able to collect from Reuven. Are we able to do that just by itself? Or do we need, is Mesira enough? Or do we need a shtar to that effect or whatever? So now we're talking about a case. Now we're talking about a related case, few related cases involving where shtar is going to be written, and on the face of it, we're able to give it over with other words. That's what we're in the middle of discussing now. So let's finish the sugya, and then it'll be a little clearer. Anyway, the point is, as I said, there's a lot of different explanations among Rishonim when we're saying over here that if he said you. Adim, you make a kinyan with me, and with that, you're going to acquire this field on behalf of Pliny. Then there are a few, and we're saying that, and then he says, write a shtar. Then we're saying afterwards, he can rescind permission to write that shtar. And we're saying there are a lot of different explanations among Rishonim why he should be able to change his mind on that. You have the Rashbam's explanation that he just doesn't want that the gift should be backed by a shtar. You have Tosfos's two explanations that he doesn't want his credit rating to be ruined, whether because people are going to know that he's selling or gifting his fields and know, therefore, that he has less land, or because people may think, people, even though it is, in fact, a shtar matana, people may think that it's a shtar choiv or shtar mecher. We have Rabbeinu Yohanesin, who says it's not that he's rescinding permission to write the shtar altogether, it's just that he's taking away he's saying that I'm not going to pay for it. We have the Raivad and others who say that we're talking about when the shtar includes achrayus nechosim. And then there's Rabbeinu Yonah and various other Rishonim who follow him. Even though, yes, when you sell a field, that creates a shibud, but he may not want that there should be a shtar available to prove that. So therefore, that would be why he could rescind permission to write it. And in fact, the Ramban and a number of other Rishonim say that where the shtar is being used as a proof and there's no achrayus. Then, in effect, if they were to write it without his permission, then that would be what's called mipiyam v'loy mipik sabam, that Adim have to testify verbally and based in. They can't write out their testimony and send it. So when a shtar is written, usually when a shtar is written, that's fine. That doesn't violate that rule because it's being done with it's being done with his consent. But here we're saying if he says, I don't want you to write it, then that would violate that rule of mipiyam v'loy mipik sabam. So there's a lot of different reasons why he might be able to rescind that permission. Anyway, so that's case number one. Case number two, continues Rabbi Yitzchak, al menas shetichtu v'loy es hashtar, if he tells them, do the kinyan to acquire the field on his behalf on condition that you write him the shtar. Meaning, in other words, that now he's making the kinyan of the field dependent on him receiving the shtar. Well then, choza ben b'shtar ben b'sada, then he would be able to rescind permission both for the writing of the shtar and for the actual kinyan of the field. Because at that point, the recipient has not yet been kona the field by means of this kinyan that the Adim did until the shtar is written for him. Which is how the Rashbam says it, and the Rambam. The Ritva says that once the shtar is signed, then that would be enough. In any case, the point is that so that would be the second case. Now, Rav Chiya ba'Oven adds in the name of Rav Huna that there's a third case. And once we have that third case, then we're going to see that on the face of it, you have a case. So far in these two cases, we're not really relevant to what we were discussing before about being kona shtar with something else. There we were talking about just are they able to write the shtar in the first place, and is the kinyan of the field effective? Once we have the third case that we're going to discuss now, then we're going to see the relevance as far as the point is, we're talking about transferring ownership of a shtar from one person to another. So he says in the name of Rav Huna that there are three cases. You have the first two that we said, and then trade hodam moran. We said the first two already. idoch, and then we have a third one that Rav Huna is adding. Im kodam molchet v'kosev as shtar, if the seller went and prepared and wrote the shtar before he sold the field, so in other words, exactly that. He needs money, the Rashbam explains. He wants to be able to sell some of his nechassim. Now, he may find a sofer happens to be available now, so therefore he has a shtar pre-written out, and it's available this way. As soon as somebody is willing to buy his field, he's able to write out that, he's able to take that shtar that's already written out and give it to that lokeh. So now, when he does that, ka'osa shishaninu, and that would be along the lines of what we're going to learn later in the Masechta. We are indeed allowed to do that. We are allowed to write out a shtar for the seller, even though the lekeach is not there with him yet. The Rashbam points out, in other words, on the face of it, you would say it's mechzi kishikra. Doesn't it look like a lie? Because after all, the fact is the field hasn't been sold yet. The answer is, what's the concern? The concern is that he might lose the shtar, and then the lekeach, whose name is written in the shtar, might come and say, look, you sold me the field, and here's the proof, I already have the shtar in my hand. Fine, if the mocher wants to take that risk and have a shtar pre-written before he's actually sold the field and received the money for it, fine, if he wants to take that risk, we're not obligated to prevent that from happening. So therefore, so it is valid for him to have a sofer write the shtar in advance. He knows he expects to be able to sell this field to Pliny for X amount of money. So therefore, now when the sofer is available, even though the lekeach is not there and has not actually given him the money yet, he can already have the shtar written. So then Rav Huna continues, kivin shehechzik zebakarka. So then we have the other way around. Once that lekeach, whose name is written in the shtar, once he does a chazaka of whatever kind, any of the valid methods of chazaka on the land, and here we don't mean chazaka of 3 years, we mean the chazaka of the kind described in an earlier part of the Masechta, for example, no gadol paratz kol shehu, if he put on a lock or took off a lock on the door, if he breached a hole in a fence or fenced it in, or any of a variety of other things that show that he actually owns the land. So once he does that, then the shtar is acquired wherever it is. This shtar that had already been pre-written, the seller intends to be makne that shtar to the lekeach. So therefore, so he's koine it with kinyan agav. Because the zuhi shishaninu, this is like what we learned in the Mishnah in Kiddushin, nechosim she'em lehen achrayus, nechosim that do not have achrayus, namely metautlin, including the shtar, niknin nechosim she'esh lehen achrayus, they can be acquired together with, as kinyan agav, with nechosim she'esh lehen achrayus, namely land, bekesef, b'shtar v'chazaka, with any of the valid methods of acquiring land, whether it involves paying money or shtar or chazak. So the point is, in other words, on the face of it, this is a case of selling, this is a case of transferring a shtar using mil, using words, because to begin with, the mocher agreed verbally that he's going to sell this field to the lekeach, and we're saying that even though the shtar has not yet reached his hands, then we're saying that he's able to be koine. All the more so on the face of it, that Rashbam continues to explain, all the more so on the face of it, if you write a shtar to say that you're selling the other shtar, then it should be enough. So you see that mili can be acquired with other mili. So before on Amud Aleph, we were saying that it can't be, and therefore, according to the Rashbam's way of understanding it, you had to do Masira on the shtar, writing another shtar to say that I'm selling the first shtar is not enough. So then, on the face of it, now we see that you don't need that. Now we see that it's enough to just, Reuven and Shimon mutually agreed that Reuven is going to sell the field to Shimon, and automatically we're saying that Shimon is acquiring the shtar no matter where it is, without Masira. So that's according to the Rashbam. Tosfos discusses the fact is, though there's a big difference over here. Here we're not talking about there's no shibud that's being transferred with the shtar. Here we're talking about the shtar itself as a proof, as a shtar raya that he owns the field. So how do we compare it to the shtar that we were talking about on Amud Aleph, where we're trying to transfer ownership from one person to another, is a shtar choy, where there's an actual shibud that needs to be acquired. And again, Tosfos had learned before that the Gemara had said it's not enough to just do Mesira with that. You have to write out a second shtar. But here we're talking about a shtar mecher, which is strictly for a raya, and we don't need a shibud to be transferred because the shibud already exists. So Tosfos discusses a number of possibilities. First of all, Tosfos says whether there are edim or not, and that means in other words whether a shibud has been created or not, then Rav Huna is saying that the shtar is acquired no matter what. Tosfos also goes on to discuss you could have a case where he's selling and stating that he's not going to be doing a shibud. The shtar, the Ran adds also the shtar may even have new conditions that now is creating a new aspect of the shibud, new obligations or whatever that didn't exist before. Anyway, Tosfos further goes on to discuss and says that following the Rashbam's logic, following how the Rashbam is explaining that. What we're saying is that the shtar itself, is transferred as soon as he transfers the karka. Then we're saying that the shtar is automatically acquired by Kinyan Agav. So what we're saying is that the Gemara had assumed that the seller doesn't want to be makna the shtar until the chazaka on the land takes place, and after that, then already we're saying that it's just enough to say that he's giving him over the shtar. So the question is, at this point, the Gemara is not assuming that Kinyan Agav is a sworn Kinyan. So therefore, the Gemara is asking that you see there's an example where shtar is being transferred with mili. But then again, Tosfos goes on to discuss various angles on this shtar and why exactly the Gemara is assuming that it would be just enough, why the Gemara is assuming that saying that I'm handing you over the shtar is how that proves as far as other kinds of shtaris where on the face of it where you actually have a shibud being created. Anyway. So the point is that we see from this statement of Rav Huna that we have a case where shtar can be transferred with mili on the face of it. So what are you telling me on Amud Aleph that it can't be? And the answer is agav shiny. The answer is when you're doing a kinyan agav is another matter. A kinyan agav where you're transferring ownership of karka, and along with it you're transferring metaltlin, namely in this case the shtar. The whole concept of kinyan agav is the Rashbam points out, we learn in Kedushin from Pesukim. There's a Pesuk in Divrei Yomim that mentions that Yehoshaphat, the king of Yehuda, gave out to his children various fortified cities in Yehuda together with Metaltlin, and we learn from that they were coded to Metaltlin together with the Kaka. The point is, though, that this is not mili. This is a maisa gadol. This is the equivalent of doing Mashicha on the money itself. Therefore, yes, therefore it's Kenyan Agav. Therefore, that is considered a strong Kenyan, and therefore that doesn't violate our rule that we said on Amud Aleph that you can't transfer a shtar with only mili, because here it's not only mili, here it's Kenyan Agav, which is stronger. And according to Tosfos, the vote is that you thought to begin with that a Kenyan Agav is a weak Kenyan. No, it's actually a very strong Kenyan. Again, Tosfos who learns that on Amud Aleph we were saying it's not enough to just do Mesira. You need a Maisa Gadol in the sense of writing another shtar. So Tosfos is saying, here the Gemara is answering, that doing Kenyan Agav is tantamount to writing another shtar.
Agav also works for animals.
Agav works for any Talbin, yeah. And after all, the Gemara proves from that. After all, consider coins. They can't be acquired with chalifin. We learned about that in Bava Metzia. Unlike other metaltlin, coins are even weaker than other metaltlin. Other metaltlin, you can acquire with karka, you can acquire with chalifin, but coins you can't.
You mean
in other words, chalifin, exactly that, like Kenyan Soda or like trading or whatever we had in Bava Metzia, for example. If I want to trade a gold dinar for 25 silver dinarim, so we can do it by, for example, that you where we said, for example, that you can you can give me the 25 silver dinarium, and with that, you've acquired the gold coin wherever it is, because the gold coin is considered like payrus relative to silver. But and you can acquire payrus with khalifin. But when the money is being treated as money, then you can't acquire it with khalifin. So you can't acquire it with Kenyan Sudir. And yet the agav ara nikni, yet you are able to acquire coins with Kenyan agav. So we see, therefore, that Kenyan agav is a much stronger kind of Kenyan, and therefore it's not mealy, and therefore that answers our question. Yes, shtar, we can't acquire with just mealy, we need something stronger. Mesira, according to the Rashbam, writing another shtar according to Tosfos. But here, in Ravuna's case, where we're saying that you're causing the other person to acquire a shtar by means of Kenyan agav, that's strong enough by itself that's a fine way of acquiring a shtar. So ultimately, the answer is, in other words, that ultimately the answer is that no, you can't acquire a shtar with just mealy. You do need some kind of maisa. According to the Rashbam, that maisa would be mesira, that you hand it over from hand to hand. You're asking about Matan Torah before. Fine, Hashem gave over the luchos to Moshe Rabbeinu. That would be mesira. According to Tosfos, that you need another shtar. Very well, then. Eventually, we have the Sefer, the Torah was written down. You have the Aseret HaDibros that were given at the time on the Luchos, and later on you have the Torah written. I mean, besides that anyway, the giving of the Torah, it's the Jewish people are accepting it voluntarily. That's it. We're not talking about that over here. We're also we talk about Torah as we have the Torah on many different levels. It's a matona. It's also a sale. It's also a yerusha. So there's different angles on it. Okay. Anyways, the Gemara says, he hodr a pop. As we have the example of Kenyan agav involving money, we have a story involving Rav Papa shows up in a bunch of places in Shas. We've had it so far in Bava Kama and in Bava Metzia. He had 12,000 zuz that was owed to him in Beit Chozoi. Beit Chozoi is an area nowadays. It's in Iran. It's a few months journey away from Bavel, from the port of Bavel where Rav Papa lived. So he was owed that money for whatever reason, and now he had to collect. Now he had to collect that money. Now the problem is, if he just sends a shliach to get it, the problem is that the people in Beit Chozoi are going to say, well, on the way back home, it might get stolen, or something might happen to it, and we're going to have to bear the achrayos. So we don't want to do that. So what does your papa do? So he wrote out a shtar hashar. He wrote out a power of attorney he wrote out a power of attorney to Rav Shmuel Ba'acha, Ninu Nialela, Rav Shmuel Ba'acha, Agav Asifa Debesei. So what he did was he wrote out a shtar hashar saying that Rav Shmuel Ba'acha now has the rights to collect that money. That money is now going to be considered his. And how is he makne it to him when he's in Bavel and the money is all the way in Beit Chozoi? He was makne it to him with Kenyan Agav, because as we learned in Kiddushin, when you do Kenyan Agav, the metaltalin do not have to be on the karka. You're makne to somebody karka. And along with it, metalplin. The metalplin can be anywhere else in the world, and he's still counting them together with the character.
Did he have character to be
makna? Yeah, he did. So that's agav asifa debasing. What he did was he used the threshold of his house as the character that he's transferring ownership of to Rav Shmuel Ba'acha, and now with Kenyan agav, now Rav Shmuel Ba'acha is considered the owner of that money. Now, what happens is, when he comes to Beit Chozoi, then fine, he can tell them, give me the money. They're going to say, wait, but what if something happens on the way? He's going to tell them, doesn't matter. I'm now the legal owner of that money. As soon as you give that money to me, you are potter. You have no further achrayus. Therefore, they'll have no problem giving it to him. So we see that Kenyan agav works for money, even though Kenyan khalifin wouldn't work. And the Gemara finishes off. Also, when Rav Shmuel Ba'acha came, Nafak La'ape Ad Tavach, Rav Papa came out until all the way to Tavach to greet Rav Shmuel Ba'acha. Now, why did he do that? He knew it was coming. Yeah. So the Rashbam explains that the point was that he came out. He was so happy that he had gotten his money that he came out all the way to Tavach to meet of Shmuel Ba'acha. The point, though, of the story is we see that when we see when we're saying he came to greet him means he actually did bring the money, and therefore, so we see that it worked. It worked. Kenyan Agav worked, and therefore, the people in Beit Chazoi had no problem giving him the money. They weren't concerned about that it might get lost on the way or something. Rapapa is the one who sent it.
Oh, yeah.
So later on, so he was machnehim the threshold of his house with Kenyan Sudar, and Kenyan Agav worked to be machnehim the money as well. Later on in the Masechta, the story is brought again there that Ashbam brings that some say, first of all, here that Ashbam explains that Tavach is the name of a place. So now, later on in the Masechta, that Ashbam explains that Tavach may mean the middle of the way. In other words, Rapapa went halfway to meet Rav Shmuel Ba'acha, and the reason would be that Ashbam brings over there that the reason would be to prevent that Rav Shmuel Ba'acha himself shouldn't keep the money for himself. However,
how would that change?
So this way, he gets it from him halfway. In other words, but the Rashbam says that's not really because he already wrote in the Hashah, whatever you're collecting, I'm accepting on myself. So we see he made him a shliach. There would be no need for him to go and meet him halfway to make sure that he doesn't rescind the shlichus. With that said, there are a few other explanations of Rishonim why the Gemara makes the point that he went to meet him in Tavach. The Ramach, the Shittim Ukubetzis in Bav Metzia, which is one of the places where we learned this, brings from the Ramach from Moshe Kohen, an important Rishon, that similar to the explanation that the Rashbam rejects later in the Masechta, the reason is true. He has a shtar hashah that's saying that the money is considered his, and therefore that he's going to bring it to Rapapa. Nonetheless, though, and later on, that he'll give the money to Rapapa, and Rapapa will get back the threshold of his house. Nonetheless, though, on the way, people might come to Rav Shmuel Ba'acha and start saying, you know, there are various excuses and reasons that you could use to rescind your shlichus and keep the money for yourself. So Rapapa wants to forestall that. Another point, Rabbeinu Chananel makes the point, is he wanted to make sure that Rav Shmuel Ba'acha, if he gets all the way to where the Papa lived, he might say, well, you know what, I own the threshold of your house, I'm keeping it. So like this, before he has a chance to do that, then Rav Papa goes and gets the money from him and gets back the title, the ownership of the threshold of his house, and that way forestalls that issue. Whatever the case, the point is, we see from that story that Rapapa was machna the money to Rav Shmuel using Kenyan Agav, and so we see that Kenyan Agav works even for coins, which are very difficult otherwise to find a valid way of Kenyan. So therefore, certainly it works for a shtar, and therefore when you machna a shtar using Kenyan Agav, that's not considered a weak Kenyan, such that we should say it's rather considered a strong Kenyan, and therefore it will work instead of Mesira according to Rashbam or Mesira plus a shtar according to Tosfos. It's enough to do Kenyan Agav, and that will also work as a valid method of transferring a shtar. So in short, there are a couple of different methods that we can use to transfer a shtar. According to the Rashbam, it's enough to do Mesira on a shtar. He says various other places in Shas where it says Osius Niknis Mesira mean just that. All you have to do is transfer over the shtar from hand to hand. Tosfos explains that those Gemaras means something else, and what it means is, for example, it means by shchiv merah. And therefore Tosfos says that no, our Gemara has concluded that you do need you need a shtar, you need mesira plus a shtar to be written that you're transferring ownership. And now we're saying, in addition, another equally valid method of transferring the osius in a shtar would be Kenyan Agav.
Where do we see that the Kenyan Agav is a stronger Kenyan?
We see that Kenyan Agav, the Rashbam points out, we actually learn from Psukim. So that's as opposed to the Kenyanim that we've been talking about, Mesira and writing another Shtar, are based on logic. So a Kenyan that's based on Psukim is naturally going to be a stronger Kenyan.
Which Psukim?
So that's what I said before. The Pesuk in Divrei Yomim describes how King Yehoshaphat, one of the early kings of Yehuda, at one point to so the pasuk says he gave the kingship, the next his successor as king is going to be his son Yehoram, because he was the Bechor, but his other children, he didn't leave them out in the cold. The pasuk says he gave them lots of gifts of various kinds of metalplin, together with fortified cities in Yehuda. So the together with implies that they were kona the metalplin together with the karka, together with the fortified cities.
I thought we didn't derive halacha from ksuvim and
generally not. Except, that's in other words, if the ksuvim say do such and such or don't do such and such, we don't necessarily learn from it. But here the pasuk is giving us a factual statement of what he did, so therefore we can see that such a thing works. That is a valid method of pinyan, because we see that it was in fact used in practice.
And that concerns halacha.
So in that, to that extent, we can learn halacha from that. The whole concept of kinyan chalifin, we also learn from psukim and ksukim. We learn from the story in Rus over there with the boyaz and the goyal. So, yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. All right. So the Mishnah had said, we said when you're selling a boat, we said there's the various things that are sold with it and the various things that are not, including that you haven't automatically sold the slaves who drive the boat, who row the oars, or the marzufin, the sacks that are used for the merchandise, or the antiki. So my antiki, what does that mean? It means the merchandise on the ship. Further on, the Rashban talks about, does that mean, in other words, that we're saying that he's not selling the merchandise that's on the ship, and certainly not the merchandise that's not on the ship right now, or does it just mean in general the merchandise that usually goes on this ship is not sold? The point is, in other words, as we said in the Mishnah, things that are essential to the handling of the ship, the oars, the mast, the sail, etc., those are sold with it, even though, like in the case of the oars, they're not attached, as opposed to these avodim and Martsufin and so forth, they're not used exclusively with this ship. So therefore, so they're not automatically sold with it. Okay. Mishnah says, Mocher, continuing on this topic of selling metalplin, you sell A, what are you? You sell A, have you automatically sold B? So the Mishnah says, Mocher is a koron. If a person sold a wagon, loy mocher is a produce, then he hasn't automatically with it sold the mules that pull it, the animals, the mules, whatever that pull it. Mocher is a produce, then mocher is a koron, and vice versa. If he sells the mules, then he's not automatically selling the wagon. Similarly, mocher is a tzemed. If he sold the yoke, tzemed literally means a pair, because they would usually have two oxen yoked together, to plow or whatever together, loy mocheras a bucker, then he hasn't automatically sold the cows, the oxen that go with it. Mocheras a bucker, loy mocheras a tzemet, and vice versa. If he sells the oxen, he hasn't automatically sold the yoke. The Rashbam points out that the reason why we're using different animals for different things is because, practically speaking, when it comes to pulling a wagon, they would usually use mules. When it comes to being yoked together to plow or whatever, they would usually use oxen.
Mule is a mixture of something.
A mule is a hybrid of a horse and a donkey. Yeah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Hadomim Medin. Rabbi Yehuda says it's not so simple to say that when you sell the ox and you haven't automatically sold the yoke or vice versa. It's going to depend. You can see based on the amount that he paid. Ketzad, Rabbi Yehuda says, what do I mean by that? Suppose that Reuven says to Shimon, sell me your tzemed for 200 zuz. Everybody knows that a yoke doesn't sell for 200 zuz. 200 zuz in those days would be the amount that a person could live on for a year. So that would be a very inflated price for a yoke. Necessarily, it must mean, in other words, Rabbi Yehuda is going to say, as the Gemara is going to explain, the word semed can have a double meaning. It can mean the yoke by itself, but it can also mean the yoke together with the oxen. Now, when it comes to the wagon, it's not necessarily like that. People don't necessarily, Rabbi Yehuda is not arguing in the case of the wagon necessarily, because people don't use the word korin, the wagon, to also refer to the animals. They have separate names. But when it comes to the word semed, which means a pair, it can be used of the yoke that pairs them together and the other equipment that goes with the yoke, or it can be used of the paired animals themselves plus the yoke. So that's, as the Gemara is going to point out, it's a matter of terminology. So if Yehuda is arguing that, given that if you're offering 200 zuz for a tzemed, it can't possibly mean the yoke alone, then therefore, hadam and medin, we can show by means of the money that he meant that he expects to get the that he expects to get the animals as well. But the Chum say the money is not a proof, because it can mean that it can mean either that he wants to give him the extra as a present, or it can be a mekach tos. We'll talk about that in the Gemara. This is an example. The Rashbam, by the way, gives an example that
you said
there's a
line between.
He says, sell me your yoke for 200 zuz. How do you do it? It's well known, Shainat Seven. Masayim zuz, that you don't pay 200 zuz for it. Seven. The Rashbam points out over here, it's not that you have three opinions in the mission over here. The words loy mocharas hatzemed, the words mocharas habakol and mocharas hatzemed is divrei hakol. This is a unanimous statement. Then within that, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim are arguing, does that mean always or does it mean only sometimes? We have various examples throughout Shas of that kind of thing where we'll have a stam mishnah that will make a statement and then Tanoim will argue, what does that statement mean? There's a lot of discussion about the history of the right of the composition of the Mishnah. There are opinions that it seems from various places that there existed an original form of the Mishnah, which the Tanoim already were learning in their times, and then in many cases they argue about the finer points within it. So here you would have the Stam Mishnah, which what some historians call Yisoida Mishnah, like the foundation of the Mishnah, that said the general din, when you sell the tzemed, you haven't automatically sold the bakar. Now, coming to Rabbi Yehuda and the Chacham of his times and argue, what does that mean? Is that an across-the-board statement always? Or are there cases where, yes, when you sell the tzemed, then you've automatically sold the animal? So the Gemara says, Toni Rav Tachlifa Bamar Rava Kamed Rav Abohu, Rav Tachlifa Bamar Rava Tora Braisa in front of Rav Abohu, different than our Mishnah. That says, Mochras HaKoren Mochras HaProdus. If he sold the wagon, he has automatically sold the animals, the mules with it. So Rababo says, "V'anan loy machot nan." What do you mean? Our Mishnah says he hasn't sold it, and a Mishnah outranks a Braisa. Omale Ismiye, so Rav Tachlifa asks him, "Should I delete this Braisa from my repertoire?" Sometimes the Gemara will say that. That a braisa is mistaken and we shouldn't learn it, or at least we have to fix it up or something. So Rav Tachlifa is asking, if you're telling me, Rav Abohu, that my braisa contradicts the Mishnah, then should I discard this braisa and not teach it anymore? Omalei, so Rav Abohu tells him, Loi, you don't need to delete it, but from now on, to tauge mas nisach ba'adukin boy, from now on, explain that your braisa is talking about where they're all tied together at the time of the sale. So in other words, when the Mishnah is saying that if you sold the wagon, you haven't automatically sold the mules, that's talking about where they're not tied to it at the time. So therefore, so we say, so the wagon doesn't automatically include the mules, but if they're all tied together, then it goes all together as a unit. And therefore, yes, when you sold one, then automatically you sold the other. So here you have, now again, Rabbeinu Yonah points out the distinction between a wagon versus a tzemed, where again, as the Gemara is going to go on to say over here, tzemed itself has a double meaning. Kora in a wagon does not. Nonetheless, though, if the animals are tied to the wagon at the time of the sale, then we can assume that he meant to sell the wagon in a useful way, namely with the animals that currently are attached to it.
So tzemed meaning yoke, what else does it mean?
That's what we're saying. The word tzemed can mean the yoke alone. It can also mean the yoke as in the animals that are attached
yoke,
to the yoke, that are yoked together. Yeah. Fine. Now, we said in the Mishnah, Mochras had tzemed, like Mochras had bakar. We said that if he sold the tzemed, he hasn't automatically sold the cattle, the oxen. And Rabbi Yehuda had disagreed and said, Hadomim Maidi, and we have to look at the amount he paid. And based on that, we'll figure it out. So the Gemara says, hey, Hidomi, well, what's the scenario? Are we talking about a place where the word semed is used exclusively for the yoke and the animals are always called bokor, always called cattle? Well, then pshita tzimda zabin le bokor le zabin le. Then obviously when he says, I'm selling you my semed, then it means I'm selling only the yoke. And how can Rabbi Yehuda say that it would include the animals as well? The elder to kodolay nami the bokor tzimda, On the other hand, if it's the kind of place where people often call, where people often, or at least many times, use the word simda, semed, which is the Hebrew equivalent, to use to mean the yoke together with the animals. So then, kule zabinle. Well, then in that case, then he sold him the whole thing. And why are the Chachamim disagreeing? The answer is loy tzricha. The case where the Mishnah is needed and where the machlokas is given, most people call use the word semed only for the yoke, and people call the cattle separately bakar, the ikanami, but there are some people in that area who use the word semed to mean the animals that are yoked together as well. So now, Rabbi Yehuda savra adam medin. So Rabbi Yehuda says now, given that you have some people who use that terminology, and a large amount of money was paid. So therefore, so it must be that so it must be therefore that we that he must have sold the animals as well. Whereas the Chacham hold that still the fact is, since many people in this area, maybe even most people, call semen and bakar separately, then we don't say adamim medin, because after all, you would say, listen, yad lekeach ala tachtona. You have you have a chazaka, they have a chazaka that the cattle until now belonged to the original seller. You want to prove that you're one of the ones that, or that the seller is one of the ones who uses the word semed to mean the animals as well. You're going to have to bring a raya for that. The fact that the money, the Rabbi Yehuda is saying the money alone is a raya. The Chacham is saying the money alone is not a raya. Fine, it could be that he sold the animals as well, but you're going to have to bring some other proof to that effect. And why is Hadamim, why is Ein Hadamim Raya? The E Ein, so Ein Hadamim Raya, because as we said, that it could be that he's giving a gift, or it could be that he's selling at an inflated price. Well, the question is, the E Ein Hadamim Raya, fine, but if we're saying Ein Hadamim Raya, but he's still overpaying for just a yoke, Lehebi Bitul Mekach, in that case, shouldn't we have what we learned in Bava Metzia about the case of Aino, where the overcharge is more than 1/6? So why shouldn't he have the right to cancel the whole sale and get back his money and then give back the yoke?
He could actually bought it, but gave that money with understanding that this he thought this place.
Yeah, well, whatever it is, that's the point. In other words, if he's paying 200 zuz, like in Rabbi Yehuda's example, and all he's getting for it is a yoke, which is worth 50 zuz, let's say, then he's been massively overcharged. And the din is, as we learned in Bava Metzia, he has the right to bitul mekach. He has the right to say that in that case, that the sale should be voided. So what's the difference whether we're saying he acquires the animals or not, one way or the other? Once he either he gets the animals and good, or he doesn't get the animals and he's saying, listen, then take back your money and no thank you. Now, you can argue maybe the Chachamim don't hold of the concept of Bittul Mekach. Obviously, they hold of Aino. That's something in the Torah. But maybe they would hold that. Maybe they would hold that even if the overcharge was more than 1/6, maybe they would hold that all he has the right is to, he has the right to a refund of the overcharge, but not to void the whole sale. The problem with that is Vatnan. We learn in a Mishnah in Bava Metzia when we learned all about Aina. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Hamloicha Sefer Torah Behemo Magolis Ein Lahin Aina. Rabbi Yehuda had said that if you sell a Sefer Torah or an animal or a pearl, then there's no din of Aina, because as the Gemara explained over there, Rabbi Yehuda holds each of these things. You want Davka this thing, a Sefer Torah, because of the importance of it, an animal because you Davka want an animal of the same strength, let's say, as another one that you have, or another for the same color or whatever, so that they'll match. And a magolis, the same thing. You want to be able to make a setting and in jewelry or something, and you want something that exactly matches. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda had said, you'd be willing to pay even more than normal in order to do that. And the Chum said, that no, when we say, there's only a few things that are listed earlier in the Mishnah. Slaves and shtaris and kaukais, where we learn from Sukkim, that I know that the regular dinim don't apply from them, don't apply to them. So we see the Chachamim do hold of the regular dinim of Aina, including Bitul Mekach. So what do the Chachamim mean over here? So the Gemara says, "Ma, you're right. Ma, ain damim raya. Nami dekatoni to have a bitul mekach. You're right. When the Chacham say over here, ain damim raya, they don't mean, well, tough luck. You ended up buying a yoke at an inflated price, and you're going to have to eat that for that extra amount that you paid. No, it means he's entitled to bittul mekach if he wants, because he was overcharged more than 1/6. But we're saying if he doesn't choose to exercise that option, then we don't say automatically the other guy has to throw in the animals in order to compensate. No, the ein adamim meidin, ein adamim raya. The fact that he paid extra in and of itself is not a proof of what he actually bought.
So what's with this price? Well, you have these three things that.
So that's what we're saying. The Chachamim are saying when it comes to avodim, shtaris, and karkaris, then there's the dinim of einal don't apply at all. Now, Rabbi Yehuda had added three things, one of them being an animal, where also einal doesn't apply, and the Chachamim disagree with him. And the Chachamim hold that no, einal does apply for that. Now, the Rashbam has a long explanation over here. He says the problem with that explanation is, fine, we see the Chachamim hold that Einah applies to it. Where do we see from that they hold that Bitul Mekach applies to it? Fine, they can say, like the Rashbam said at the top of the Amud, of course Einah applies. It says right there in the Torah, the concept of Einah. The Chachamim, of course, are not going to argue with that. But where do we see anywhere in there where they hold that when they're overcharged with more than 1/6, that he has the right to Bitul Mekach, such that the Gemara has to answer that, yes, the Chachamim do hold he has the right to that. So the Rashbam says that no, the flow of the Gemara is like this. If we're going to say, if the Chacham is saying, Ein Adamim Raya, that means, in other words, that so he paid 200 zuz, and in the end, always getting a yoke, always getting the yoke and not the animals themselves. Well, then why does the sale even remain valid? Why are we saying that the Mishnah is saying, Mochas Etzemed, Loi Mochas Habakar, implying, in other words, the sale of the yoke was a good, perfectly valid sale, and there's nothing further about it? We just have to talk about, is he also getting the animal? Based on the concept of Einah, he should have to, even if the Einah was only 1/6, he should have to return him the extra overcharge. And if there was and if more than that, and it's much more than 1/6 overcharge, then there should have to be Bitul Mekach. So you can argue the Chachamim hold, maybe not either. Maybe the Chachamim say that even in a case of Einah, you never have to return the overcharge. Maybe all the guy is just lotzis yidei shemayim. If he wants to be yotze, then he doesn't get in trouble with Hashem, then he's going to return it. But maybe Beis Din doesn't require it. But no, we see, since they're saying to Rabbi Yehuda, loy amru ela aseilu, only avodim, shtaris, and karkos does an Einah not apply to, that implies that they're saying that other things, Einah applies even to the extent, not just lotzis yedei shemayim, because after all, my karka also, a person could say to himself later, wait, why did I overcharge that guy so much for this karka? Let me get back in Hashem's good graces and give the guy his extra money. And we're saying that it doesn't apply. So when they're saying it does apply, meaning that Beis Din can require him to make him pay back, well then, in that case then, why is our Mishnah implying that he doesn't even have to pay anything back? And the answer is that, yeah, the Mishnah doesn't mean, the Mishnah is not addressing the question of paying back the overcharge or Bitul Mekach or anything like that. The Mishnah is just addressing the issue, do we say that afterwards he can say, I'm entitled to the animals as well or not? And the answer is the Chacham are saying he's not. All that is one answer. The Iboy saying, or another answer you could say, yes.
It's all very logical, but there's no ground and basis to say that Bitul Mekach is included in such a case.
But that's what the Gemara is saying. Our Mishnah is not addressing.
I know the Gemara is saying that, but where did it take from?
The logic is, first of all, the Gemara is going to give another answer now, but the logic of this first answer is, our Mishnah here in Bava Basra is not dealing with the dinim of Einah. You want to look at the dinim of Einah, look in Perak HaZohav in Bava Metzia. Here the Mishnah is just discussing the case. Ultimately, Shimon, who bought this Tzemed, is he entitled now to say to Reuven, look, implicitly, Tzemed includes also the animals, and I did pay you 200 zuz, therefore I'm entitled to the animals. Or can Reuven say, nope, fine, you're going to claim that you overpaid for a tzemed, then fine, you're entitled to bitul mekach if you want. If it was a difference of 1/6, then you're entitled to for me to repay you the overcharge. But one way or the other, you're not getting these animals. So that would be one way that we can understand our Mishnah. The Yibayis Tema, or another way you could say, ki omer abanon einal bitul mekach. You know when the Chachamim say that we apply the concepts of einal and bitul mekach, b'chdei shadas toya. When it's something within the amount that a reasonable person might have made a mistake. So you have, let's say, for example, so the matter of shtus, or more than shtus, or less than shtus, is, for example, so you have, let's say, you're selling you're selling a yoke, which ordinarily, let's say, would go for 50 zoos, and you paid 60 for it, or 65 or whatever. So we could be talking, it's a reasonable amount. You might have misvalued how much it's really worth. So then we can talk about Aina and Bitul Mekka and all those dinners. But when you get to the point, it's impossible. No logical person between 50 and 200, let's say, nobody would have made such a mistake. Loy, then we don't say the whole concept of Aina and Bitul Mekach. Then it's clear. Then we have to say it's very likely that he gave it to him as a gift. And therefore, the Chacham, so in other words, the first answer was saying, yes, he's entitled to the refund of the Aina or to Bitul Mekach, as the case may be. And the second answer was saying, that no, when he overpaid so much that there's no way to think that he was mistaken in that, then we have to say that he gave it to him as a gift. Another possibility you're showing him bring up is it may not be so much a gift. It might actually be that previously he had at one point stolen money from him, let's say, and now he's embarrassed to come and say, you know, I stole from you. I want to refund it to you. So instead he pretends like this, like I'm overpaying for something, and then he doesn't end up taking it. But there, according to that second answer, therefore, in other words, the whole concept of Aina and Bitul Mekach wouldn't apply in this case, because the fact that he knowingly paid so much for only a tzemed, and according to the Chacham, it doesn't include the bakar, because again, we're talking about in a place where most people use the word tzemed to mean just the yoke. Then anybody afterwards, he can't file a claim for Aina, because we're going to say, to begin with, you would have known very well that you don't pay 200 for a yoke, you only pay 50 or whatever it is. So therefore, it must be that it was a gift, and therefore that's that. So that
might be specific to this case, but that doesn't exclude the concept of Bitul Mekach.
No, what we're saying is in this case it does. In this case, if afterwards he comes and
in
says,
this wait case, a minute, but I'm. We're talking in general about the Bitul Mekach.
In general, what we're saying is, according to the second answer of the Gemara, Bitul Mekach would be where it was where the overcharge was not significantly more than, was not a great deal more than shtus. So again, in our example, if let's say you have a yoke which normally would sell 50 zuz, and here let's say he paid 65 for it, so it is more than shtus, but it's within a normal range. A person might mistakenly think that a yoke is worth 65. Later on, he goes, as we learned in Bava Metzia, having bought the yoke, he goes and shows it to his relative or his friend, and the guy says, you got taken for a ride over here. You could have bought the same thing by most other people for 50. Then he can go file a claim of Bitul Mekach and say, you know what, you take back your yoke, give me back my 65, and I'll go buy a yoke from somebody more honest. But what we're saying over here is there's no way that he could ever possibly think that the thing would be worth 200. So therefore, when he did, then we're saying, no, even if his friends go and tell him afterwards, you know what, why'd you pay 200 for that? It's worth only 50. When he goes back to the seller can tell him, I'm sorry, you knew perfectly well that you don't pay 200 for a yoke. So therefore, I have every right to consider that you gave me that extra money as a matana, or let's say, like we said before, to make up for something that you previously stole from me or whatever. And therefore, I'm not obligated to return you that extra 150. That's what the Gemara is saying on the second answer over here.
Yeah, there's a better argument. The better argument would be for the buyer to tell the buyer that he should have asked whether or not the behemoths were included, and the fact that he didn't.
There is that renders too, fine. But I mean, you could say that throughout all the things in these productive. I mean, you could say when you're selling a house, and afterwards the guy's going to argue, I bought the yatsia with it, and the other guy says that not, and I sold you a field and doesn't include the chod of amurkam and sadna shikma and all that. You should have specified. The whole point of these productive is you don't always have to specify, because it depends on minhag hamakom, it depends on what people commonly do. But so here we're saying, according to Rabbi Yehuda, yes, if you're paying that amount for a tzemed, and it's a place where some people use the word tzemed to mean the oxen as well, then it means they must be included. But I'm not saying that, no, that's not enough of a proof in and of itself.
Well,
and
then
again,
you should have...
The second answer in the Gemara. And again, according to the second answer in the Gemara, had it been that instead of paying 200 for the whole thing, let's say, had it been that he's paying only 65, let's say, then yes, the seller could say, you don't get the oxen. But on the other hand, he could say, I also wouldn't have paid 65 for a yoke. And therefore, let's do Bitul Mekach, and let's rewind the whole thing. But when he pays 200, then according to the second answer, the Chacham was saying nothing new.
Right. Yeah. But the fact remains that if he really wanted to to have the behemoth, he should have specified it.
Well, and if he specified, then there'd be no discussion. Over here, then Rabbi Yehuda and the Chacham obviously wouldn't be arguing. But the point is, the whole point of these prakim is just because he didn't specify in and of itself doesn't mean anything. When I buy a boat and I don't specify that I'm also buying the mast, we said in the first Mishnah of our Perek, I've automatically bought the mast regardless. And later on, you can't say, wait, I want to keep the mast for myself. I want to transfer it to another boat. It doesn't work that way. And the same thing with all these things. We're talking about what is sold and what isn't sold. What you specified, obviously, if you specified, there's no argument. But we're talking about where you didn't specify what is automatically included and what's not. And we're saying over here, according to Rabbi Yehuda, just the very fact that he paid 200 zuz does not require him to specify and buy in the animals as well. They're automatically included because there's no way anybody would pay 200 for just the yoke, whereas the Chacham say that it's not so.
Which I think the position of the Chachamim is more logical. But
well,
the fact
halacha
is
in fact, it's not a matter of logical or not. The halacha is, in fact, like the Chachamim. Yeah.
But that's exactly the point. So if we say that for the Shikma, he should have specified it, why can't we say the same here? I mean, what's the difference?
The difference is that over there, it's actually very much the same thing. If he had spoken, It is actually very much the same thing. Over there, we're saying, for example, that the Chorav HaMurkav and Sadna Shikma are not automatically included with the field because we said, in effect, they're like a miniature field of their own within the larger one. So if he specified, I'm buying the field and the Chorav HaMurkav, then of course it's sold. And if not, then not. Similarly, the Chacham are saying over here in the same point, he's buying a Tzemed. It's a place where the word semed does have a double meaning, but most people use the word semed to mean just the yoke. And therefore, unless he specifies the animals, then they're not going to be included. He paid a lot extra, and you would assume the extra amount, as Rabbi Yehuda is saying, automatically means the animals as well. But they're saying no because of any of the two reasons that the Gemara is saying over here. Ein adamim raya. Either it means, yes, he's entitled to bitul mekach afterwards, or it means he's not, even because we say it must be that he gave him a tam, that he gave it to him as a gift.
So what's the chidush of this additional case? What is it adding that the Shikma doesn't add?
Because in the case of the Shikma, we didn't talk about extra money. We didn't talk about how much extra he's paying. Here we're talking about what he's paying, let's say, in our example, four times what he would normally be expected to pay for just a yoke. Besides that, also in our Mishnah, you have the whole concept of terminology. Over there, we were saying a Shikma is by default not included in the definition of a field. And we said, pretty much everybody agreed to that, as opposed to over here, we're saying the very word semed itself does have a double meaning. It can mean the yoke, or it can mean the yoke plus the animals, and that's part of what drives the machlokes over here, which again, like I said before, Rabbeinu Yonah points out that that's why in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda did not argue in the case of a wagon with mules, because nobody calls the mules part of the wagon. We said if they're tied together is different, because then it means you're selling the wagon with all of its equipage, but otherwise not. So our Mishnah is giving us a chiddush as far as this matter of terminology, and as far as this matter of that he paid much more than you would expect, whether we say hadamim raya or not.